If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Happy Tuesday afternoon to you. Not nearly as many people walking around with their heads up in the air today, but a lot of people on Michigan Avenue as we sit here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I told you that Andrew Herman will be here, Suzanne Muchen as well. John Najarian's on hold right now. We'll get to him in a second, but I want to tell you about Kelly Leonard from Second City will be here. You know, he is the host of the podcast Getting to Yes And, which is a pretty cool idea. It takes a term from improv. So he talks about leadership, business issues, and all of that. And one of the things we're going to talk about later today is the value of a liberal arts education. Doesn't all have to be about business or engineering. Does a liberal arts education actually equip you for what you need to do in the workplace? John Najarian on a phone line now. You see him on CNBC and at the Najarian Family Offices. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch, my friend.
Thank you, Stephen. Great to be back with you, sir.
All right, so we've talked about Boeing in the past, but here they're up 3.3% last I checked, fueling the Dow's gain again today. Is this about the speech last night, about the contracts that were issued earlier this week or announced anyway earlier this week? What's behind Boeing today?
Well, a lot of the big contracts earlier in the week were going out to Airbus. I think one of the big Chinese air providers bought a whole bunch, I think like $6 billion worth of Airbuses. But there were some 14 new orders for Boeing aircraft this week as well, mainly that 737, which is extremely popular. It's a single aisle plane, but very popular and capable of coast to coast and so forth. I think it's just a fabulous company with a great future in front of it. I mean, even when the president first tweeted against them, saying Air Force One was too expensive, the new Air Force One stock went down hard. That was one of the first examples of the powers of his tweet. And then it came back with a furious rally. And ever since then, anybody who's been long the stock has been happy.
I know the Air Force announced yesterday or earlier anyway that Boeing and Northrop Grumman would get the Minuteman III contracts as well. So that's got to help. Does the president's speech last night have an impact on defense stocks?
Well, it was viewed by many as a really good speech. So it did mainly what it was supposed to do as far as quelling some of the fears that he was completely off the rails. But as far as defense stocks in general, I imagine a further commitment to Afghanistan and or any place in the world where there are terrorists, that's good for the likes of Boeing, which is involved with virtually every kind of defense that we provide, whether it's missiles, drones and the like, or the big bombers and things like that. Various companies like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon are going to benefit from that additional spend. So I can't say it wasn't part of it, but I think the company's just doing awfully well regardless.
I want to talk maybe about some other stocks moving today, but talk to me first, because a lot of what I'm reading this morning says that Wall Street traders are looking ahead to the central bankers meeting in Jackson Hole later this week. What is that, and do you think there'll be anything of significance? It's not just the U.S. central bank, right? It's Europe as well. What do you think will come out of that?
It's Europe. It's Japan. I mean, so the three biggest central bankers on Earth will be there in Jackson Hole. All three of them will be speaking, Draghi, Kuroda, Yellen. But it's pretty much been telegraphed so far, Stephen, unless they go off script. But they're unlikely to do that. They're not like President Trump. They're going to go exactly to script, I believe. And if they do that, it'll be a very boring Jackson Hole with a lot of great food, a lot of fresh trout and things like that.
I was going to say, at least you'll be in Jackson Hole.
Oh, yeah, I'd take it. It was obviously a few years ago that we actually got Ben Bernanke talking about QE2 out at Jackson Hole. But that's been really one of the lone surprises out there. It tends to be a very academic discussion without a lot of fanfare. And Draghi, the head of the ECB, has already put it out there that he is not going to come up with any policy things that haven't already been said. Same thing with Kuroda and Yellen. So I think this should be pretty boring, but nonetheless, we have to watch it.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. CNBC just bulleting that the Chevron CEO, John Watson, is going to step down. It seems to be CNBC's story. I don't see it anywhere else. What do you make of that, or do you hear anything about that?
We've been hearing that there were rumors he was going to. This is Watson, the CEO over there, who's going to be stepping down. There's even a lot of rumors swirling that a guy named Michael Wirth, W-I-R-T-H, maybe he's a really big refining expert, Mr. Wirth is, and he's been one of the names that people have been floating as a possible successor if indeed Watson stepped down. So it could be that Watson, who's only 61, I say that because that seems young to me, Stephen. In other words, I don't know that he needs to be riding off into the sunset, but apparently he wants to step down, and maybe part of the reason is just like when a football coach has a great assistant coach and you don't want to lose him.
Sure.
I think they were maybe worried they weren't going to keep this or get this Michael Wirth if indeed Watson decided to stay for another 5 years. So that might be part of this equation.
This is going to be one of those days where after the business lunch, I go across the street and I buy lunch for everyone at Chipotle because I keep rooting for them. Deutsche Bank just came out with another negative recommendation. I think their stock is at a 4-year low.
It is. Here would be some of the good things about the stock, however. Like you said, 4-year low. I still think they have a product Americans like to buy, but obviously that issue most recently with people having a problem at one location
right.
is partly why it got driven down to here. Here's what I'd say, though. If you do think that we get any kind of tax reform, and obviously McConnell was talking about it yesterday, as was Secretary Mnuchin. If we can get any kind of tax reform, these guys pay the maximum tax rate. Chipotle does, because most of their operations are in the United States. They can't really, I don't want to say hide, but they can't really hold a lot of earnings overseas like some other types of businesses. So they've got 2,200 restaurants in the United States, only about 29 international. So if you take that top rate down, that's going to impact these guys. That's really good for Chipotle.
Well, that's good to know. All right, real quick, do you have a recommendation? What are you watching today?
We're taking a shot on American Eagle, AEO, because they have earnings tomorrow and they had some very strong call buying. So if somebody's that's sort of quick money or fast money like me, AEO, American Eagle Outfitters, we're in that one for the earnings there tomorrow morning.
All right, put me down for 2 to show for American Eagle.
All right, I'll put you in. You're smart to bet to show instead of to win.
Nice to talk to you. We'll do it again next week. Andrew Herman is in the house, an editor at DNA Info. And, DNA Info had a great story today. I don't think it was only theirs.
A great story? We have many every day.
Yes, you do. Every hour, in fact.
Yeah.
About the fact that a group called Astronomers Without Borders is asking people to donate their eclipse glasses.
Right. Now they tell us, right, after we threw them all away yesterday.
Maybe if you'd had that story 2 days ago.
If they could get ahead of the story, then that might help. But, yeah, that's a good idea because you did see all those people with the glasses and then it was over, and then what do you do with them?
I had so much fun taking my glasses to other people, you know, who didn't have a chance to see them.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I was in Millennium Park and I didn't have glasses, but some lady said, "Would you like to?"
Yeah, because it's so much fun.
I was like, "Why I would? Yes."
Let's go to the Goodwill. Uh-huh. Beverly is had a St. Vincent de Paul store there,
A thrift store.
Store, not quite the same as Goodwill though, right? They closed. Goodwill's moving in.
Yeah, right. So this is a pretty big place, 15,000 square feet at 93rd and Western. The new one's going to open in March, and you know how Goodwill works. They accept donations, they sell stuff, and they use the money to train and support people with disabilities. And I was looking at their list. They have about 40 in the Chicago area.
Yeah. Goodwill is red hot, I think. My kids love going to the Goodwill store.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. My daughter went back to school. My son, on his own this week, went to, there's one, I think, in Northbrook. And And he was gone a long time. I'm like, where did you go? He goes, oh, I went to the one in Arlington Heights, too. I mean, they actually just go and sift through it. They're very proud of what they come back with.
Yeah, well, so it's a pretty big business, secondhand business, $18 billion. And the projections are that it's going to grow at about 11% a year.
Wow.
And it was interesting. I was looking at a report that looked at sort of trends in secondhand stores like Goodwill. And they were talking about the typical customer. Typical customer, women over 65. Maybe that wouldn't surprise you, right?
Yeah.
But also women 18 to 24.
But the women over 65 are going back to get those ashtrays that they yeah. donated 30 years ago?
I guess. But so you have these, so you have older women, but then you also have women 18 to 24. And they ask, well, why do you shop here? And both of them said, because it's so cheap. But the younger people say they're also driven by environmental consciousness.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, they see sort of the world as awash in stuff. And maybe if you don't need it and somebody else can buy it, then maybe we won't have so much stuff floating around the world.
Well, I can tell you, in my world, Goodwill is huge. And, you know, I could see millennials or people of a certain age, you know, income bracket or whatever, mm-hmm. repurposing things like that, being a little creative. I used to walk around, now that I think of it, I bought a black trench raincoat in the mid 80s and walked around wearing that at Marquette. I totally forgot about that till just this moment.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason the projections are high for them is because most retailers, their main competitor is Amazon. And Amazon doesn't sell secondhand stuff. And even eBay is selling more and more new stuff and less used stuff. So it's kind of a wide open market for them.
Well, we'll see how they do there in Beverly. All right, last week we were in Logan Square and talking a little bit about how the neighbors were concerned about they didn't want to become the next Wicker Park or mm-hmm. Wicker Park North.
Right.
And now there's this story in DNA Info about Hollander Moving and Storage, 105-year-old building, is that right?
Yeah, so it's at 2418 North Milwaukee Avenue, 5 stories tall. And when they built it more than a century ago, it was advertised as fireproof, which was something special.
Yeah.
But at the time when Hollander was starting the company, or when they started in the 1800s, 1880s, they used horse-drawn wagons. And so this building that they have in Logan Square is really designed for horse-drawn wagons. And so they've sort of outlived its usefulness. And as we talked about last week, you know, Logan is just booming. And
right.
Here they have this building that's kind of cool looking and doesn't really work for them anymore. And now I think the ship has arrived in terms of economic opportunity, and they're going to sell it.
You know, I wish that there was a way. I know there are programs and there are tours you can take, but that you could walk by a building like that, because so many of us have probably walked by that building,
mm-hmm.
had no idea it was designed for horse carriages, you know,
yeah.
and what it was 105 years ago.
Yeah, it's part of the cool history of the city. Now, they're still in Elk Grove Village, and they say they're going to look for another location in the city, but this one is
up for sale.
Right.
What are they going to do with it?
Well, so it's up for sale, and I guess you can do, they're just opening it up to developers, whether or not the building's going to be saved or they'll just tear it down. That's unclear at the moment, but I kind of hope they somehow figure out a way to keep it.
Yeah, I do
yeah.
too. Andrew Herman, read more at dnainfo.com/Chicago. Nice
All right.
to see you.
Okay,
see
thanks,
you next
Steve.
Week. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Suzanne Muchen is in the studio. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff, the podcast you can listen to at WGN and WGNplus.com, mm-hmm. iTunes, all over the place. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
We have a lot to talk about.
I feel like it's one of those weeks where we need double time.
And what's our topic? What do we talk about? We talk about women leadership, women in the workplace.
Women in the workplace, women in the news. There's a lot. I feel like we should start with Erica Holder because we left.
Harold,
sorry. Right. Hold C. Erica Harold, because that's where we left off last week.
So she's running for the Republican nomination for Attorney General.
Against Lisa Madigan.
And last week we talked about the fact that she was described as former Miss America.
As the lead.
As the
that
lead.
Was the
right.
lead of her description. Right.
And you took issue with that. I did not as much because
right.
I think that's the headline.
Mm-hmm.
And then she can't. So but she uses the description as well. Right.
Well, two things happened after our show. First is that we got some feedback from a listener who said, look, love the conversation, but just want to tell you guys her own press release. And he sent it to us, said mm-hmm. former Miss America in the lead. Now, that said, to my just one point of clarification for me, I'm not saying that title is not relevant. in her own press release, it said super lawyer and Miss America, just like I felt it should have said Harvard grad and Miss America. But I'm now defending her for something she doesn't necessarily feel the need to be defended
for. So what did she say?
So in her own press conference, she defends her Miss America title and talks about it. And this was, I think, the crux of our conversation
last
week.
She says it's good training.
It's good training.
And how is it good training?
Right. So I took issue last week and said, the real issue here is, why is it relevant that you were a beauty pageant contestant? She says, look, it forces you, if you are really a serious pageant contestant, which she clearly is, you travel the country, you meet people, you have issues, you fight for them, you advocate for them. And she makes another very interesting point, which is she says, thanks to Donald Trump's ownership of the Miss USA pageant, which is fundamentally different. That's much more about bathing suits and looks and not quite as serious, I'm putting air quotes, but right, serious as Miss America, people are conflating the two.
Did you know that?
No,
I had no idea. No.
So I think I'm going to give Eric a little piece of advice. First of all, whatever you're proud of, do you. That's awesome. I will also say there are people out there like me, I don't think I'm alone, in feeling that your creds as a lawyer should be in the storefront window along with any other pageant creds you want to promote.
And so this is interesting to me because I think beauty pageants are...
I know you do. Yeah.
What?
Well, you said last week that you think it's like a really big bonus that's
part of her
career.
Yeah, I was
going
to get to that point. My first part was, I think they're kind of stupid.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I think they should probably, they don't serve much function now.
Right.
However, I do think that if you've won a Miss America pageant, that clearly speaks to more than your beauty, and it does speak to your personality, drive, and abilities.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's brag-worthy.
Right, and so does she.
Yeah, I know.
So I have to stop putting something out there that the candidate herself clearly doesn't need to defend, doesn't feel she needs to defend. So it's interesting. We'll see how Lisa Madigan treats it.
Okay, this next thing we're going to get to now, it probably should come last, but I'm scared to death I'm going to run out of time.
It's so good.
So Tiffany is one of these people. She's a pop singer, right? I really never...
Well, yes.
Right. So she was a pop singer in the 80s,
yes.
A mall, like one of those mall
Correct.
Pop singers?
Yeah.
Okay, and now she's on a
reality show.
Everyone, just so you know, Suzanne sends me stories. I read them, and then I try to understand them. So here's my understanding.
Yes.
A pop star from the 80s right. is now on a reality show about bad plastic surgery.
Right. Things gone bad.
Things gone
botched.
Bad. Okay. And she said on the show that she's had 17 procedures in a year.
Yes.
To try to look like Ivanka Trump.
Correct. I mean, she says Ivanka's her role model, and that therefore she has raised her cheeks, she's changed her nose, she's switched her, I don't even, to be honest, it's so awful to me that women are doing this to themselves. But the fascinating thing here is because she thinks Ivanka Trump is elegant and she wants to be like her. Wow.
Wow. So have you seen the pictures?
I have.
I'll have to post them on my Facebook page.
I don't even know what to say because I don't know how to talk about somebody's beauty who created it from surgeries. Does she look like Ivanka Trump? Sort of. But how would you feel if that were your daughter?
Well, weird. And it's, but that, so let's go from that weird yeah. thing into the Ali Reisman
yes.
story where she's the Olympic gymnast. And, you know, there's been just a horrific story, and it really hasn't gotten the play.
Right, which is her point today.
You think about it, Larry Nassar, a former doctor who was, he's been accused, he's been convicted, I think.
He's been convicted of child pornography and is waiting to get, he has a ton of other lawsuits. He's in jail.
The allegations were, or the charges, or the conviction, that he abused these girls
yeah.
in the USGA.
Right, that, as young as 12.
That he was supposed to be tending for. And the U.S. Gymnastics Association, according to Ali, hasn't been as forceful enough
right.
in sort of protecting them.
Right.
Now, let's get to that in a second. But before we do, part of the idea is now celebrities taking on social issues.
Exactly.
So you've got Ali doing what we think is responsible.
Right.
Another celebrity, Tiffany,
yes.
is getting plastic surgery to
what
look more like her.
What message does that send?
Right. So who do you believe?
Well, and last week we talked about Taylor Swift, right? So there's a whole world now where celebrities are standing up for moral and social issues. Maybe that's the world
and lipo issues.
And lipo issues. I, you know, we've now put ourselves through social media and the dawn of the Trump era in a situation in which celebrity, in some cases, equals credibility. And maybe that's, you know, what we're talking about with Miss America as well. So you've got to be super careful. Are you using it for the greater good or for self-promotion?
All right, let's talk about the gymnastics thing, though, because she's got a point.
Oh, I'm so glad she spoke out. And I also think that Allie herself was a fabulous role model to lots of girls. She came back. She fought through some injuries. And she's now saying what I think the big message here is, which is we haven't given this enough attention. This is really bad. We need to also support these girls in the same way the NFL is now waking up to the fact that all these guys have concussions and they need to do a better job supporting them post-trauma. She's saying a lot of these girls might be traumatized, and we owe it to them to do some
good. And the story's been around for over a year. Yeah. I mean, it's been lingering around for a long time.
Right.
But it never really bubbled up to this.
That's
should be
point.
A national outrage.
Right.
I mean, it really should.
Oh, yeah.
These are the darlings of the Winter Olympic teams.
Yes.
They were being abused by this guy.
By a doctor.
As a child. As
yes.
Children.
Somebody that earned their trust to go into an office and take their clothes off. Like, this. Is, there's nothing more horrible.
And if you're the Gymnastics Association, obviously you want to rid yourself of this guy, but the more publicity you draw to it, the better, the worse it is for you.
Right. So I'm in this case, I think her celebrity was well used to come out and speak openly and also very clearly. I mean, she called him a monster.
Right.
I get it.
Louise Linton.
Wow.
Is the wife of Steve Mnuchin.
Which let's just say the extra N in there.
Are you guys related?
I was just going to say, I want to make sure everybody understands that extra N makes all the difference.
When did your family drop the N?
It really is so awful. Even I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, that's my last name, but it's not.
Okay, so Louise Linton, she went took a trip to Kentucky with her husband, an official trip it looked like.
Yep.
And then she Instagrammed, snapped. What did she do?
She Instagrammed and she showed a picture of herself walking off of the plane. And she does a lot of these hashtags, which are very common on Instagram, and says, great day trip, great hashtag day trip to hashtag Kentucky. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that she then went about tagging all of the designers she was wearing that day, which included things like a Birkin bag she was wearing, which the goes, you know, on, at the low end for about $10,000 to $12,000.
And so people just ripped her for that.
Ripped her for
it. Was she wrong to do it? I mean, she's a gazillionaire.
She is. So this is where the celebrity as role model gets a little murky, because she's also, she's a private citizen. We all know that he came from Goldman Sachs. Their wealth clearly wasn't created by his current job in the last 6 months. Now, should she have been, should her decorum as someone who's now in the spotlight as the wife of a cabinet member been more, should she have had more discretion?
I think probably so.
Oh my God, yes.
I like to think that people who can afford those clothes don't need to brag about
them. Exactly. And also, but if she's showing the designer, she's also trying to say, and you can be like me too. Because the only reason you would tag that
if is if you marry a guy from Goldman Sachs.
And if you do, and then you also can get into these stores and be, you know, bought by retail, she should have had a greater sense of we're in a moment in which there was no way she wasn't going to get slammed.
Right. And so she did. She responded to one woman.
Which is also a problem.
In a very condescending way.
So condescending.
Talking about how she pays more in taxes and than this woman does, and about how the public service and the sacrifice she's making.
I mean, how did that help?
Let me just read the last part of it.
Oh, God.
You're adorably out of touch. Your life looks cute. Go chill out and watch the new Game of Thrones. It's fab.
I can't even, really. It's just so horrifying. And I wonder, what you think of this, if because Trump has kind of set the tone for we can all say anything we want on social media, in any forum, and it's okay.
I don't think he gets the blame for this, because I think those people were on social media anyway.
Can we blame Hillary's emails?
You can blame Hillary's emails.
That's always the problem.
All right. Suzanne Mnuchin, thanks for coming by.
No, you didn't.
Listen to the podcast.
Oh my God.
The big payoff at WGMplus.com. Suzanne Mnuchin. We'll talk to you next week. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right. Kelly Leonard is here from Zach City, the host of Getting to Yes. And, right, the podcast,
yep,
you can hear it, WGNplus.com, WGNradio.com. And the idea is you talk to, getting to yes and we've talked about this, is mm-hmm. a sort of a trick or a tool in improv.
Right.
And you talk to different business leaders or thought leaders in that podcast.
Yeah.
And so today, the guy you've got coming up is George Anders.
Right.
Who wrote a book. Tell me the book.
The book is called You Can Do Anything, The Surprising Power of a Useless Liberal Arts Education.
Okay, so Kelly's now going to repeat the name of the book for all of you parents who are worried that your kids are English majors.
Yes, go get You Can Do Anything, The Surprising Power of a Useless Liberal Arts Education.
So I think I could only be a liberal arts guy.
Yeah, me too.
I could not have been an engineering student or a science student. I didn't have it in me. But it's easy to say that the liberal arts education is what you should go for, not engineering or whatever.
Right.
But it's really hard when you're a parent sending someone off to be, you know, an English.
Because you're envisioning a green smock and right. macchiatos.
Right. Exactly.
That's what you think is going to come out of
for
that.
For years and years and years.
Right.
But this guy's arguing that's not really true.
He is. And I think he's right. And I am speaking as the parent of a sophomore at Skidmore, a liberal arts college,
nice, yeah.
you know, that I'm paying a lot of money for. 45% of the workplace tasks today are going to be automated in the near future. So what are we looking at for jobs of the future? Well, we're looking for people who can be critical thinkers, people who can be storytellers, and people who can be translators. So when I see the books that my kid was buying, that's Plato and that's right. Tennessee Williams, and if my first thought is like, what's that going to do in the world? Well, in fact, what that is going to do in the world is prepare you for the jobs of the future.
So is he arguing then that this is new or that it's always been the case?
Well, he's arguing that's always been the case.
Because I think it would be always
yeah,
been the case.
It's always been the case that is a powerful ingredient for leaders. And most of the leaders I've talked to have agreed with that. Many of them were English majors. However, it's become even more critical, especially when we've got this sort of cultural bias against being an English major. We've had a lot of people fighting about the university system.
And so, right. So then how do these English, it seems to me, mm-hmm. based on no data whatsoever,
yeah.
that these English majors who end up being great successes in business are kind of surprised to find themselves there too.
I guess so.
Right, because if you're 18 or 19 and you're becoming an English major,
right.
I don't know that you see that, yes, I'm developing the skills that will work, make me a titan of business.
Right. Well, and here's where yes and comes in, and the tie with that, which is when you are sort of improvising, you're making yourself available to whatever is happening in the moment. And in general, that does come out of a liberal arts education idea of I've got all these tools, all these ideas. How do I apply them in this moment? And the next moment is going to be different. So it makes you more agile, makes you a better communicator. He's got a great line in there where he says, all leadership is about, and leadership problems is about communication, and all communication is about leadership. And I think that's really true.
Explain that for me. Why do you think so?
Because leaders have to provide vision. Leaders have to get other people to do work. Managers are task-oriented, but leaders are communicators.
That's the difference, isn't it, between a manager or someone being task-oriented,
yeah.
learning how to do accounting, or build a rocket ship, or someone learning how to learn.
Right, right,
and
right.
It seems to me like liberal arts ed students are people who, if they do it right, would go on. It's sort of a stimulus to go through a life of learning. Not like you got the degree and it's over.
Absolutely.
I think maybe I'm giving terribly short shrift to people who are accountants. My wife. Or scientists or things like that. I mean, well, that's probably not fair.
You need all of it, right? I mean, this is the thing. It's that there are some people who are better at doing that kind of work, and there's other people who are better at the visioning. I guess what we're just saying is that the liberal arts education has had a bad rap for a while, and it's time to lay off that and support that kind of learning.
Are people starting to lay off?
Oh, I think so. I mean, in my experience, and I talked to tons of business leaders, right, in, for the podcast, and none of them are suspicious when the guy from Second City has a podcast that they might come on. They kind of get it. They get that's a need that they've got in the ever-changing workplace.
The name of the podcast is Getting to Yes, and the host is Kelly Leonard, and people can find it
at WGN Plus, WGN Radio, and SecondCity.com.
All right, buddy. Nice to see you.
Thanks, man.